Welcome to this edition of the Beef Roundtable. This month, our discussion will focus on value-added feeder calves. I'm Dr. Ron Lemonade, your Beef Extension Specialist at Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana. The Beef Roundtable is available as a video at both the Beef Magazine and www.beefroundtable.com websites, and as a downloadable MP3 at beefroundtable.com.
And I'm Bert Rutherford, Senior Editor of Beef Magazine from Wheat Ridge, Colorado. Our first guest is Jennifer Houston. Jennifer and her husband run a stocker operation, commercial cow-calf herd, and they feed cattle in Texas and Kansas. They also own and operate a livestock auction market in Sweetwater, Tennessee, where they sell about 50,000 head of cattle every year. Jennifer has chaired numerous joint checkoff committees and has been active in the Tennessee Cattlemen's Association and the Tennessee Beef Industry Council. On the national level, she has served as on the NCBA Executive Committee and was the Federation Chairman last year. Currently, she is the NCBA Policy Division Chair.
Our second guest is Jim Collins. He's a native of Alabama and was raised in the beef cattle business. Jim has cultivated a unique blend of involvement in the cattle and livestock industry. He currently heads the Quinton Group, a network of economists, nutritionists, agronomists, and other experts to meet the needs of a producer clientele. Jim is a veteran of the University of Georgia Extension Service, and he served as Executive Vice President of the Georgia Cattlemen's Association. Jim helped create the Southeast Livestock Network and has served as a Director of Industry Relations for 6 years.
Jennifer, you often hear talk out in the business about premiums and discounts in the marketplace. So first, I think, let's just define what an average calf is, average feeder calf and an average calf that calf producers sell, bring to the auction market, either at weaning or shortly after?
That's a pretty hard question, first of all, to define an average feeder calf. But in the Southeast, an average feeder calf might be between 450 and 550 pounds. He's probably not had a shot. If he's male, 50% of those are still intact and not castrated. So it runs the gamut. That's not the ideal feeder calf. The ideal feeder calf, we shoot for more like 600 to 700 pounds, no horns, have had some kind of respiratory vaccination program, and castrated if they're males. So we really run the gamut in the Southeast. I know it's different in other parts of the state or other parts of the nation, but our average feeder cattle can look like anything sometimes.
So, you know, it's always tough to describe average, you know, and when I go to beef meetings, you know, you ask the audience, how many of you are an average producer? Nobody, you know, raises their hands, okay? So we're kind of talking in generalities, but if we take that calf that you just described, Jennifer, you know, so what would constitute a discount in the marketplace then, okay, compared to that calf?
The more the ideal. Well, obviously, if he's not castrated, that's a discount. He's a bull. Bred heifers, unthrifty ones, light muscled ones. In our area, we have a lot of dairy influence. That's a problem. If he's got eye problems, if he's got warts, if he looks like he's wormy or unthrifty, in the heat of the southern summer, if he's got a lot of hair, there's a lot of ways that you can generate discounts when you sell your calves.
Jim, in your experience, different things you've done, what have you found relative to what kind of calf really kind of takes a hit there at the market?
Well, to echo what Jennifer said, a lot of that are cattle that either have not been managed to their optimal endpoint, whether that's in terms of cattle that have been stressed nutritionally, whether that be intentionally or unintentionally, you know, cattle that come in a state that there is opportunity from a nutrition standpoint, from an animal health standpoint, that's visible, you know, as they come through the ring. Cattle that, you know, that she said, when they have a lot of extra hair in the summertime or other signs that would make the next part of the market chain, whether those are cattle going to grass or going to the feedlot, feel like those cattle have not been managed to their optimal potential. You know, as you said, skirt horns, she's not, you mentioned bulls that have been castrated. Likewise, you know, cattle that look just excessively shrunk or cattle that are excessively conditioned too. Ones that are either side of the center point, and again, this isn't an industry where, particularly here in the Southeast, we serve the next phase of the industry, and as much as producers can do to avoid being out of that main target is a big part of that.
So let's follow up with that in just a minute. You know, so what do you think the discount would be for a bull calf?
It's bigger they get. Probably $5 a hundred, you know, in the 5 to 6 range that we sort of see. If you get the little bitty calves, which, you know, we don't really recommend selling, but the 3 weights, you know, there's probably not a discount. On up, it'd be a larger discount, you know, in the 7, 8, you know, larger cattle is what we see at our market.
So what kind of discount would you have for horns?
Horns probably, it sort of depends on who's doing it. Some of our buyers won't even take horns. I'm not sure what price I'd put on that. Probably 5 to 7 would be my guess. Jim, you may have something to add to that.
I'd say that that's reasonable. And two, you know, the dynamic we're coming out of where we had a period of time there where, you know, all cattle, regardless of quality, were really high. You know, we probably had maybe a disincentive out there, you know, the last few years when cattle were so high, that a lot of guys who were doing many of these management things may not have been as vigilant. But I think it also depends on which market you're going in. Are you trying to sell those as an individual? You're trying to sell them as a group? But for sure in that range, you know, she's talking about $5, I'd say that'd be a minimum. And then also on the horns, particularly if they're wanting to buy those cattle and go straight on the grass or straight into some other scenario where they wish they were already healed and ready to go, then you may have a larger discount than that.
So what's the value for preconditioning? I mean, we talk about that a lot in the industry, all right? And, you know, depending on the market, probably, that you're working with, it seems like, you know, there are some situations where preconditioned calves are actually a premium, okay? And then there are other situations where preconditioning is not a premium. Can you talk about that at all?
Okay, Jim.
I was going to say, you know, it goes back to a statement each of us have mentioned. It depends on where that producer's and how they're marketing their cattle. I think it's as much about knowing the time of the year, the marketing channel they're using, and then that's going to have a great impact on how much value they capture in preconditioning. Jennifer alluded to the little bitty 3-weight calves. You know, a lot of those are not sold as often in the large groups as in the 5 and the 6 weight, you know, more uniform lots. But I think in this market, there's value at all weights for management done at the farm. And again, that period of preconditioning. I also would say the more value, the longer those cattle are preconditioned, the more value the cow-calf operator captures. I guess in my days with extension and also working with producers, you know, 30 days is not even the minimum anymore. I'd say if you're out to 45 days, and that's the point as a producer, you start capturing value through the compensatory gain that's part of the weaning process. You're also capturing value in your health program that was done both while the calves are still on the cow and then post-weaning. So the proverbial, it depends. I mean, it can be you know, from negligible dollars if you're not marketing those cattle into an environment where preconditioning is recognized. But I'd argue preconditioning always pays because of the shrink that you capture. Yeah. Jennifer, I'll allude to one of UT, Dr. Rawls' studies he did 10 years ago, and then Dr. Rankins at Auburn kind of replicated it. Just looking at the dollars producers capture in managing and capturing shrink through preconditioning, through timing of when they deliver cattle to the market, all of those are very manageable dollars and recognizable dollars. How many dollars that is, you know, we could debate that all day. I'll see what number Jennifer throws out, and then I'll chime in.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what I tell my producers. I don't throw out a number because I do exactly what Jim says. We tell our guys that they really get their premium at home. Now, whatever they get at the market is just gravy. And Dr. Rawls' studies 10 years ago invariably showed that there was a premium for doing that. It depends on the market. However, though, if you precondition yours and you've done everything you can do and you bring them to a regular sale at my place, for example, on a Wednesday, and they're the only five preconditioned calves there and they match nothing, you may not get any premium at the market. You're still going to get it at home, but you may not get it on the market price. So it does pay to, if you're going to do that, and I think it's great to do it, you know, find your niche, find your marketing alliance, find a feeder calf sale, and we can talk more about those later, but find a way to capture all the value that you've earned.
And I think that's an excellent point. You know, and the bottom line is that the buyer sitting in the stand, okay, wants to put together a semi-load at the end of the day of preconditioned calves, not five preconditioned calves on a 75-pound or a 75-head group, because you're not going to sort them on the other end based on that preconditioning. So, and we see that with some of our producers, okay, working through livestock markets. We've been talking about wean calves, but there's a lot of short and long yearling cattle, you know, coming out of backgrounding operations, stocker operations. You know, what adds value to those calves? Anything different than the wean calf that's maybe been preconditioned?
Yeah, inherently, you know, they're going to be usually a healthy group of calves. The calves are yearlings, whatever, that they know how to eat. They're usually uniform because that stocker guy has put them together. Uniformity of size, sometimes uniformity of color. There will be some uniformity of color, typically. And they sell them in our place in tractor trailer load lots because that's the cattle that we sell a lot of times on video. And we can sell, you know, our stocker guys can sell a tractor trailer load lot. So if nothing else, you know, that buyer on the other end's got a healthier calf, a calf that's ready to go for him, and he's getting a tractor trailer load lot at one time. So that's the value that they get as being a stocker, because you're going to assume by that time that most of these other discounts have been taken care of.
And I'll add to that, a lot of the stocker operators, you know, as they're looking and as this market's changed, to know even more about those cattle as they're acquiring them, both in terms of what type of lifetime health has been in those cattle or in the cow herd, when they can, you know, can have a means to carry that information through. Those are, you know, those are dollars in their pocket in terms of avoided treatments, avoided subclinical health issues they may have there. And then the other side of it is the genetic side of it. We're talking about marketing feeder cattle, but frankly, and you know, we're not that long from fall bull season, you know, a big part of this feeder cattle discussion starts when you turn the bull out. And we deal with a lot of producers of a lot of different sizes, having a marketing plan that involves the bulls you're using, and then laying on top of that how that matches your environment, how that matches the marketing channel that you're looking to use, and then capturing as much out of that as you can in your stage of the game, but having the best products you can to sell to the next chain, the next step in the channel.
So what I'm hearing both of you say is that there's a reputation here, okay? You know, when you're a seller, how important is that reputation, you know, whether it be in the livestock auction market or in a co-op or an alliance, okay, that you're marketing, you know, a semi-load lot. So talk to me about the relationships that buyers and sellers have based on this reputation of genetics and preconditioning and doing things right. You know, some of our producers kind of talk about, well, I don't get a premium, okay? And Jennifer, you've addressed, you know, probably the premium really takes place at home before you ever put it on the market. And I would agree with that. And then you've got the premium that's kind of the gravy after that. But some of our producers are selling cattle that basically have no name, okay? There's no reputation, there's no data behind them, and buyers are probably going to react to that. So do you see that happening in the marketplace?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of ways to develop a reputation. You know, we're in a part of the country to where we have small producers, not unlike a lot of the other parts of the countries, but we don't have our cow-calf guys selling tractor-trailer load lots and selling big groups of 50 or 100 or 200. So you can develop your reputation individually, which is what a lot of our stocker guys have done, by doing the right thing, letting, you know, when we sell video cattle, we basically announce to our buyers everything that we know about those calves, their health program, their feed program, their description, their grade, their breed, their sex, their weighing conditions, everything so that buyer knows without seeing those cattle exactly what he's getting. But if you're a little guy, then you can gain a reputation by joining a marketing program. For example, we're part of a Smoky Mountain Feeder Calf Association. Our market has been working with them since the early 60s in developing graded feeder calf sales. And there's all levels. There's just a regular graded feeder calf sale that you sell a calf fresh off the farm. He's healthy, but we may not know much else about him. And then we have premium sales where they've had two rounds, double vaccinated, weaned 45 days. So those sales get a reputation. So even though I, as a farmer, might have 5 cattle, 10 cattle, I'm part of this marketing alliance, whether it's through a graded feeder calf sale or some other kind of alliance, that develops a reputation. And as long as everybody in that alliance is doing things right, that reputation is gonna, you know, it's gonna stay there and it's gonna stand you well from year to year. We've got buyers that come back, we've got a Southeast Pride Select Back program that sort of goes that extra mile. Same thing as a premium, except it's all Zoetis products and they're EID'd. And we've been doing that for 10 to 15 years. We've got some buyers, that's the only sale. Maybe they only buy one man's cattle, except they will participate in that sale. So reputation is huge when you're selling feeder cattle. And don't think that just because you're a little guy that you can't be part of something that can develop a reputation, because there's ways out there. You know, if you're not where you have feeder calf sales or alliances, you know, get with your neighbor and work together to develop a genetic program, because Jim was right. Marketing begins the moment you select a cow and a bull. And then beyond that, then you think of, like, how am I going to sell them? All those things before you ever wean that calf have been decided to a certain extent.
Jennifer, you know, feeder cattle prices fluctuate throughout the year depending on a number of different factors. What does seasonality play? What role does seasonality play in the marketplace, and how does that affect your marketing decisions?
Well, one thing, a lot of people make marketing decisions for a lot of different reasons. Not always optimally is time to sell the calves. What we find in our area of the country, some of our better producers will try to calve in the November time frame, and they'll really push and get them a bump in our graded August, September feeder calf sale. That's when that select back sale is. That's when we have a couple of premium sales. So there's usually a little bit of a bump about that time in our area. And they're weaning a 600 to 700 pound calf straight off the cow, which is what our better producers are able to do. So that's the seasonality that our better producers are looking for. But there's a lot of reasons you market your cattle, and some of them are financial, have nothing to do with optimal time. You know, grass cattle, you get the grass bump in the spring, but those are usually for thinner, plainer cattle, which is not really what we're suggesting to our producers that they shoot for. If you have some that come out then, that's fine, but you know, your bigger, heavier calves are the ones that are probably not going to get that grass bump.
Well, I guess our point I'd like to follow up on is, you know, we've seen this evolution of reputation grow over 20 years, and when I first started involved with producers working together, frankly, we were 1,200, 1,250 miles away from the end point for these value-added feeder cattle. And, yeah, that's a pretty large hurdle to overcome. Building a reputation both as a group and then also, say, you know, having your cattle do what you say they'll do and then working with marketing agents or marketing partners who are about standing behind those cattle, you know, is a big part of it. I mean, we're also seeing an evolution in the last year, few years or so, of you know, some programs that are certifying these cattle based on all these different traits. And I think, you know, we're going to see more of those type programs, all the way from some of the programs Jennifer's done there to, you know, some of your programs that are USDA audited on all these different traits. That being said, I'm encouraged by that move because it gives producers, regardless of size, regardless of geography, an opportunity to try to tap into the highest value for those cattle. And, you know, one of the challenges for producers of small sizes, wherever their geography is to find a way to best market those cattle or to be sure they can find a partner, whether they have a whole load or can find someone to work with, and then have the people in the feeding end and the harvest end know where those cattle are going to be merchandised on a larger scale. So, you know, programs, whether that be we use the word reputation or there's a national program, reputation feeder cattle, there's other things that are out there that lets guys try to capitalize on both their genetics, their health, and then also the source of these cattle as we go forward.
One of the comments that I think both of you made was, you know, lot size, okay? You know, what do you think the premium or discount, okay, it depends on how you want to look at this. You know, if you had less than five head, okay, in a group that kind of matched up and kind of were uniform versus 10 head versus, I don't know, 25 or 50, you know, or even a semi-load, what kind of price incentive, okay, is there for our producers to seek out the neighbor, okay, seek out, you know, some kind of a marketing arrangement where I could sell in a bigger group? What's the advantage here? I mean, let's look at it from a profitability standpoint on a producer's perspective, how that might work. Any feels for that?
Yeah, there's been studies. Tennessee Department of Agriculture have done studies, you know, two or more, five or more, you know, two, maybe not so much, maybe just a little bit, because he's still going to take a while for that buyer to load his truck. You know, 7 to 10, a little bit, and probably 10 or better when you can get the tractor trailer load lots, you know. We try when we sell feeder cattle to group them as best we can to keep them uniform, but to group them into tractor trailer load lots. The freight is key when people talk to us, as Jim talked about how far we are from where most of these cattle are going. So, you know, I'd say a tractor trailer load, $10 a hundred to me, and that's a premium minimum, is certainly incentive for me to try to work with my neighbors or find an alliance or some kind of venue that allows me with my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 calves to get that tractor trailer load or large group price. Absolutely.
And couple that with the time of the year that the producers are trying to merchandise their cattle, looking at are there things in their environment that allow them to calve at a time of the year where maybe there's greater opportunity market-wise, and then also group up with other producers. And again, I stress find a marketing venue that will reward them for doing that. Yes, you know, she says $10, you know, you can start adding I used to talk about there's a pie of value, and that those things come from volume, uniformity, health, genetics. Depending upon how much of that pie of value you capture, is how many of those things that you have in place overlaid with seasonality and the overlaying market. And as I mentioned earlier, while we had such high cattle for a little while, maybe some producers that were new to that process and maybe didn't stay as committed to it, I think we're going to see in the near term producers who have been committed to these things long term, have been committed to a process and have followed through that process, have got some real opportunity for reward. And that's where, again, that starts back with volume and then uniformity in that volume.
So you could almost say that, you know, when prices are high, the premiums aren't as great and maybe the incentive to do some of this stuff. But it's, you know, when you've got a falling market or a low market, these practices that we've just been talking about really have significantly more value. Is that a fair statement?
Certainly.
I'd say so.
Yeah. You know, we want to help our guys in a lower market capture everything we can. You know, like Jim said, a lot of them were a little satisfied with a high market, and why should I, you know, do this extra either time or expense? And frankly, a lot of our guys, it's a struggle for them to do that. They don't have the facilities or they don't have the help to do that. But in today's market, they're looking for ways to capture every bit of value that they can. And so, eliminating the discounts, one by one, just a checklist. The more you eliminate, the better off that you're going to be.
Well, that kind of brings me to the... Go ahead, Jim.
I was going to say, one evolution we've seen is producers working together with others to get those cattle preconditioned, whereas they may not have made that effort in the past. And frankly, I think there's opportunity there, going forward, both for producers to work together or possibly even producers who want to expand their operation, to custom precondition those, and kind of by default, you start creating some of that volume as well.
So let's kind of put a ribbon around all of this. So what would you say your recommendations would be for a producer who's trying to sell a group of feeder calves? Let's put a ribbon around that.
My ribbon would probably be to know your market. Know your buyers, know where you're going, whether it's at a market, whether it's in an alliance, whether it's to your neighbor who's a stalker. Know what your buyer wants and what they're looking for, and try to produce the animals that fit that. And the second thing is, even though prices may have been disincentived over the last couple of years, the reputation we talked about, and doing the right thing. And sometimes you have to take one for the team and do the right thing so that in a falling market that guy comes back to my calves. That guy comes back to me, because even though prices were high and I was pleased with what, I did the right thing. So that's the two things I say: know your market and do the right thing.
I'll echo that a little bit and say also know your costs and know your resources. To truly market what you have, you're marketing the whole process, whether you got 30 head or 300, and that kind of goes back to knowing the ideal time of the window of the year to merchandise, and then also look at the resources you have available, whether they're on your place or on your neighbors, or then you can go get the most out of what you've invested in genetics and health and in your day-to-day management as you market these cattle.
Jim, as former extension educator, would you recommend producers minimize or work on eliminating the discounts or chasing the premiums?
That's one of those, it depends. are you in a high market or a low market? Because at the end of the day, the two are tied directly together. You certainly need to be eliminating the dead weight and, the things that you can do to eliminate those cattle that would be out cattle or be discounted. And then to achieve those premiums, sometimes that's a longer process. And again, that's where I say it goes back to starting your marketing program when you're purchasing your bulls, selecting your replacement females, and how you manage them going forward. So, I'm going to say both. One is easier to do one's faster than the other, but to make money long-term, you need to do them both.
Yeah. Jennifer, any last comments?
Just thanks for being here. Our saying, and I don't think we can reiterate enough, that marketing begins at home, and it begins when you first make your first decisions. And to look at the big picture and all these things, sometimes it's like, why can I do all that? Just start one at a time. And try to produce the best quality product you have with the resources that Jim says that you have on your place. Because the whole point is to maximize your return, to make you money. And, we in the marketing business want to help you, and extension people do, and there's a lot of resources out there. Just don't hesitate to use them.
Well, that about wraps us up for this edition of the Beef Roundtable. We really want to thank Jennifer and Jim. I think we had an exceptional discussion this go around. Lots and lots of good information that will help cattle producers out there as they start looking forward to the fall run and weaning their calves. Jim and Jennifer, thank you very much for being our guests. Please join us again next month for another edition of the Beef Roundtable.